Right, we now have Lopez versus Tarrant County, cause number 213-194-CV. If the clerk will announce counsel who will be arguing.
Mr. Jason C. M. Smith will argue for the appellant in cross appellee. Mr. Christopher Ponder will argue for the appellee in cross appellant.
Right, thank you. All right, Mr. Smith.
May it please the court. This is a whistleblower case, and because there is evidence of suspicious timing, expressed hostility to the report, failure to follow county policies, and disputed facts regarding the purported reason given for the termination, there is some evidence establishing Ms. Lopez's whistleblower claim against the county, and we would ask the court to reverse and remand the case. Ms. Lopez worked for the county for 5 years. She replaced a woman named Judy Scott, who moved on to another position. When she was bringing some materials to her supervisor, County Administrator G.K. Manius, she felt a pain in her back after she had passed Ms. Scott and had realized that Ms. Scott had, and then saw Ms. Scott running away from her. And had realized that Ms. Scott had assaulted her. She told two other individuals that she felt that she had been assaulted by Ms. Scott. She also was encouraged by county staff to report the issue to Mr. Manius and then to the authorities. This was April 23rd. She also made a report to the police. Eventually, because either of a standing understanding of the county, she was informed that the sheriff was the appropriate person to investigate this matter since it occurred on county property, and therefore Sheriff Anderson, she made a report to Sheriff Anderson. The evidence in the record shows that when she reported the issue to Sheriff Anderson, that Mr. Manius became upset because of, I guess, the nature of the relationship between Mr. Anderson and Mr. Manius. An investigation was conducted into the report, not only by the sheriff's office, but was also conducted by the Human Resources Department. And the Human Resources Department ended their investigation about the third week of June and indicated that they couldn't determine one way or the other whether there was an assault. They didn't determine that there was not an assault affirmatively, that they just could not determine. In addition, there's some testimony from sheriff's, one of the officials at the sheriff's office, that that's what they found. They just could not determine. However, Mr. Simons, who conducted the investigation, and I believe that the sheriff himself indicated that someone reporting that they'd been slapped was enough to constitute a report of an assault under the law. In addition, after the June 23rd end of the investigation, on June 30th, there was a meeting with Mr. Manius and my client, Ms. Lopez, and someone from Human Resources. And at that point, I think that's where the stories diverge. That's where Mr. Manius says that my client was yelling and became insubordinate. My client testified in her deposition that that after the last meet, and this is on page 176 of the clerk's record, after that last meeting with Mr. Manius, they kept saying I was yelling, and I was frustrated, I couldn't breathe, but Mr. Manius and Miss Worthy, they kept saying I was yelling. I was not. I felt like I was not yelling. I was trying to push them to listen to me. It's them that Mr. Manius had me in there already before they came into the door. And then on the next page, which is page 180, the same page of the clerk's record, but the next page 187 of the deposition, counsel for Tarrant County asked my client, are you saying you're talking about the yelling? Are you saying Mr. Manius was yelling at you? And my client testified, yes, sir. After that point, Mr. Manius then proposed the termination of my client, and Tina Glenn, who's responsible, who oversees human resources for the county, indicated that, and this is on page 917 of the clerk's record, so we were talking about third level discipline, and she discussed that they had considered providing progressive discipline. The county has a progressive discipline policy that provides that for violations, they're supposed to consider lesser discipline. And the reason for those policies is to not lose the training and expertise in an employee who may have a policy violation. In fact, Justice Gardner in the Rogers versus City of Fort Worth case acknowledged that a governmental entity's failure to follow their progressive discipline policy in a whistleblower case was some evidence linking the report to the adverse action, the termination. And in this case, Ms. Glenn, in fact, testified that they did consider lesser discipline under that policy. And I think even more importantly, she testified at the end of her deposition that she had, she struggled with terminating Ms. Lopez, and that there were other employees whose alleged conduct was so egregious that immediate termination was given, and she didn't have any qualms about that. So we believe this case fits the holding in Rogers versus City of Fort Worth that Justice Gardner wrote. In that case, the court looked at timing of the report, the expressed hostility to the report, as well as the employing governmental entity's failure to follow the progressive discipline policy, and determined, even though they claim they fired Mr. Rogers for filling out a customer complaint form, that the real reason was because he reported a violation of law. They also looked at timing. In this case, the report was initially made April 23rd. It was made a few weeks after that to the sheriff, and then the proposed termination was around June 30th, less than really 90 days, less than 80 days after the reported termination. Under the Whistleblower Act, there's actually a presumption that a report made within 90 days is related to the adverse act. In addition, in this case, the failure to follow the progressive discipline policy and the fact that it was considered and that Ms. Glenn herself testified that she had a problem with the termination was, we believe, some evidence that not only did the progressive discipline policy apply, but that they failed to follow it. The county relies heavily on Steele versus City of Southlake. And Steele versus City of Southlake is distinguishable in a major way, and that is that there was, one, the employee did not dispute that they had engaged in dishonesty that was the grounds for their termination. In fact, I believe the court wrote, based upon the summary judgment that Steele presented and that the City of Southlake presented, and upon the lack of evidence by Steele to raise a genuine issue of material fact that he would not have been fired based on untruthfulness, the court affirms the summary judgment. In this case, Lopez has provided evidence that she that Glenn had second thoughts or had concerns about her termination and thought the progressive discipline policy should apply. None of those factors were present in the Steele case, and therefore we feel Steele is distinguishable. In addition, the county raised a cross appeal that we argued they didn't have to file, or they did have to file a notice of appeal. They've argued that they don't. Because it wouldn't have changed the judgment. And we believe that there's some evidence that would be sufficient to support an assault claim, and therefore it was the report by Ms. Lopez was made in good faith. Not only did she subjectively believe it, and she testified to that, but that there were elements that would support her assault charge. And that's supported by the testimony of Sheriff Anderson and I believe Mike Simons, who was the
Mr.
deputy
Smith.
Chief. Yes, Your Honor.
How did the assault occur? By what means was there a touching of Ms. Lopez that amounted to an assault?
Ms. Lopez's testimony was that she was passing Ms. Scott and brushed against Ms. Scott and then felt a pain in her back, turned around and saw Ms. Scott running from the scene. So from the evidence, it could reasonably be inferred due to the proximity of Ms. Scott, due to the statements of Ms. Scott and the animosity that existed, and Ms. Scott running from the scene, that Ms. Scott either struck her with her hand, and she testified that's what...
Either struck her with her hand.
Yes. Or hit her with her body.
Hit her in the back with her body.
Yes.
Did Ms. Lopez at that time have in her hands these reports that she was attempting to bring into the room whenever she encountered?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe the record reflects that.
And I'm having trouble visualizing what these reports, I mean, a report might be two sheets of paper, or a report might be a stacked volume. What was the physical nature of this of the reports? What were they in some kind of a cover, or what were the reports? What did they consist of physically?
Your Honor, I believe the record reflects, and I think the testimony was that she was bringing in these reports that were in binders that contained information for the next county commissioner's meeting.
Binder, is it a three-ring binder and that thick, or was it a binder that was plastic connected in the back and was a quarter of an inch thick, or what kind of binder are we talking about?
Well, it was a three-ring, my understanding from the record is it was a three-ring binder. My understanding was that it was more than a half inch thick, but I without consulting the record, I couldn't be more precise.
Well, it's in the record. I'll find that. Now, in terms of the mechanics of this assault, Ms. Lopez had these binders in her hands, and she's walking past, and she feels a pain in her back.
Sharp pain, yes, Your Honor.
Yes, all right. A sharp pain in her back. And from that feeling, she concluded that she had somehow or another been touched as she walked past. Am I right so far?
I believe so.
So what, was there any person present who was observing as Ms. Lopez walked past Ms. Scott that they saw some motion on the part of Ms. Scott that caused this pain in the back of Ms. Lopez?
No, Your Honor, there was no other witness other than Ms. Scott and Ms. Lopez to the touching. Ms. Scott would be a witness and Ms. Lopez would be a witness, but no other third.
And the evidence from the record in terms of Ms. Scott was what?
Ms. Scott denied that she struck Ms. Lopez.
Did not touch her. And so the very base predicate that there was an assault is something that was established only from the testimony of your client that she felt a pain as she walked past Ms. Scott.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
In your experience that a pain can be induced by nothing more than a mental thought as opposed to an actual physical touching?
Well, Sheriff Anderson testified that a person could be arrested on assault solely on the person's statement that they were slapped without another witness or corroboration of physical.
And I understand, Mr. Smith, the content of the law as to what's an assault, but I'm trying to get down to the facts of what was testified about in this case in terms of action taken by Tarrant County as to whether or not an assault actually occurred, because that's big, a big part of this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
So what I'm trying to be careful about is not what Sheriff Anderson was reciting about his understanding of what constitute, what activity or actions constitute an assault, but what happened in this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the only testimony, if I'm getting through the record as I've read it, that an assault occurred was strictly a matter of your client's testimony that as she walked past Ms. Scott, she felt a pain in her back.
That and the fact that Ms. Scott was running from the scene. And there's a plethora of cases that say when someone is witnessed running from the scene of a crime, it can be inferred that they were, in fact, guilty of the crime.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. With that, I believe the...
It just went off, yes.
Oh, okay.
You can wrap up.
Because there is some evidence supporting the causal link between Ms. Lopez's report and the termination, because of the timing, because of the expressed hostility, because the county failed to follow its progressive discipline policy, and Ms. Glenn's testimony that they actually considered the progressive discipline policy in this case, we believe there's some evidence that would entitle Ms. Lopez to a trial on the matter. And for the reasons I've argued and the other reasons set forth in my brief, we would ask the court to reverse the judgment in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Ponder.
May it please the court. Nina Lopez was fired not for reporting an alleged violation of law, but rather for a confrontational and insubordinate outburst towards her boss, County Administrator G.K. Manius. The insubordinate behavior is what caused her termination. Despite what counsel has said, Ms. Lopez has not truly disputed the nature of the factual basis that she was insubordinate, nor has she provided any evidence of a similarly situated employee who was not fired under similar circumstances. And I'm going to, since we were just, Justice Meyer, and since most recently we were talking about this cross-appellate point, I'm going to address that first since it's most recent in time. The county did, in fact, file a notice of appeal. It's in the court's record. I think we can put that issue aside right away. The evidence that is in the record of this assault, counsel said that there were potentially two witnesses, Ms. Scott and Ms. Lopez. Well, that's not entirely correct. This alleged incident supposedly happened in the presence, within the close proximity of four other individuals, Mr. Manus himself, and two assistant district attorneys that were in his office. And supposedly this incident happened in the doorway of Mr. Manius's office. By the way, the binders are good-sized binders. And as well, in addition, another witness was the secretary outside of Mr. Manius's office. None of those other individuals, other than Ms. Lopez, saw or heard anything that would support Ms. Lopez's version of these events. And in fact, the allegation that Ms. Scott was seen running away does not exactly meet with the circumstances of the case. Ms. Scott is a 67-year-old woman who is a lung cancer survivor who is on oxygen and not prone to running away. But this outburst that occurred on June 30th that serves as the basis for this termination was also witnessed by two individuals other than Mr. Manius. And they described it at various times as Ms. Lopez acting disrespectful, out of control, antagonistic. She didn't only raise her voice. She didn't only yell. And Ms. Lopez has made a point in her brief to only contradict this notion that she yelled. The word yell does not even appear in the termination notice from Mr. Manius, if I'm not mistaken. In addition to her behavior, specific problematic things that she said to Mr. Manius, she accused Mr. Manius of having come uninvited to her house. She accused Mr. Manius of having reporters from the Star-Telegram call her in the middle of the night to harass her. Now, ultimately, she said that those, in fact, weren't true, that she was not being truthful about that. A third statement she made to Mr. Manius on June 30th was that she sent an email, that she had previously sent an email to Tarrant County Sheriff D. Anderson, enlisting his help in keeping Mr. Manius away from her. After a bit of questioning, she again admitted that that also was not true. It was this untruthfulness and the general out of control, agitated nature that she exhibited on June 30th that caused her termination. This notion that she was fired for yelling. In the response to Tarrant County summary judgment and in the briefs in this case, that's where a great amount of the counter argument is made. In her brief on page 9, it says, Lopez testified she was not yelling or being insubordinate. However, there are no record references connected to that sentence to direct the court as to what that might be. The reply brief does direct the court to a portion of the testimony that Mr. Smith read a moment ago. It's these 5 pages of the clerk's record that are part of her deposition. And there's only 4 instances where she offers any response to the factual basis of her termination. In one of those instances, she said, I felt like I was not yelling. I was trying to push them to listen to me. Secondly, I was not yelling. I was crying. I could not breathe. I was frustrated, emotional. Third, I was not yelling. I was trying to push them to listen. And fourth, finally, I wasn't yelling. I was trying to get them to listen to me. I was trying. I was out of breath and pushing and frustrated and crying, and I was scared. That is the entirety of her dispute of this June 30th meeting. But she was not fired for yelling. She was fired for gross insubordination. She never denied these actions. She never offered an alternate explanation. And in fact, shortly after that June 30th meeting, within a couple hours, she wrote an email that is in the record to Mr. Manius and copied the other 2 individuals who were present, where she said that she apologized, admits to having overreacted, and describing her behavior as inexcusable. And she offers no explanation in her brief as to why she would have apologized for behavior that supported her termination. This outburst and insubordination destroyed any amount of trust and confidence that Mr. Manius had in Ms. Lopez. She held the position of executive secretary. This is a position with intimate knowledge of the upper levels of county government. And it's essential for a substantial amount of trust and confidence between those two. And as Mr. Manius testified, it was irretrievably broken after this incident. And this incident alone is what prompted her termination. And it's also what justified bypassing the lower levels of the progressive discipline system. Ms. Glenn testified, and the civil service rule is also a part of the court's record, that says if an incident is severe enough the prior levels of the discipline system can be bypassed, and a level three termination can absolutely be undertaken in accordance with the rules. And that's what happened here. The Steele case is strikingly on point. In Steele, the police officer sent an email using somebody else's name, sent an email to the mayor of Southlake, and was fired for dishonesty, for using another officer's name. The officer filed a lawsuit under the Whistleblower Act, and the city filed a summary judgment asserting the same affirmative defense that is being asserted in this case, that the officer was filed not for what he may have said about issues within the Southlake Police Department, but rather the dishonesty in using another person's name. This court upheld the summary judgment because the officer never denied the dishonesty. Well, similarly, Ms. Lopez has never disputed or denied the insubordination that she exhibited on June the 30th. Once the basis for termination is conclusively established, according to Steele, it is incumbent upon the employee to identify a similarly situated employee who was not terminated. Her lone example that she put forth in the response to summary judgment, as well as in her appellate briefs, was to an assistant district attorney who made allegations of sexual harassment. Notwithstanding the differences in their claims, these employees were in different departments with different supervisors, and they had different duties. Similarly situated employees are those whose circumstances are comparable in all material respects. Lopez and the one assistant DA are not comparable in any respect, let alone all of the respects. The Rogers case didn't have any real application in Steele, and I don't believe it has any real application here. The procedural posture that this case is in more closely aligns with Steele. In Rogers, that, while an affirmative defense was asserted by the city, it states in the opinion there were never any findings or conclusions. It was never truly able to be considered by this court in rendering its opinion. All of the instances that Ms. Lopez attempts to use on her behalf that align her with Rogers are all examples of circumstantial evidence which might support a finding of causation. Had the county filed a no evidence summary judgment on the basis of causation, I might concede that those other instances would have some application, but that's not the posture that we're in. All of those items that Ms. Lopez uses to support her position are purely circumstantial in nature. And the Steele opinion, as well as the Supreme Court's opinion in Hernandez, state that circumstantial evidence is completely immaterial to this question on the affirmative defense. The fact that Ms. Lopez has not acknowledged, much less disputed, any of the evidence supporting the finding of insubordination, nor able to point to any person similarly situated that was treated differently, resulted in this summary judgment being granted and it being worthy of affirmation. And unless the court has any questions, I will relinquish the remainder of my time.
All right. I don't believe so. Thank you, Mr. Ponder. And Mr. Smith, we'll do rebuttal now, please.
All right. May it please the court. Just two issues that counsel for the county raised that I wanted to address. First, on clerk's record 180, page 202 of Ms. Lopez's deposition, Mr. Browder asked Ms. Lopez, do you believe an apology was in order? Ms. Lopez testified, no, but out of respect, and I and afraid for my job and how things were going. So she did offer an explanation of why she sent the apology at that point. Furthermore, counsel, I believe, offers a cribbed reading of this court's holding in Steele versus City of Southlake. In Steele versus City of Southlake, the court said, for example, we have not found evidence that Yelverton failed to fire somebody who was similarly situated. The court did not announce that that was the only way to rebut the evidence that was provided in support of the affirmative defense. And in fact, in this case, we've provided evidence disputing the nature of that meeting. Again, that evidence, because it's an affirmative defense, has to be taken in the light most favorable to Ms. Lopez when she's offering testimony from that meeting. And the with regard to the insubordination, they never, while they ask her about yelling, they never indicate exactly what she failed to do that they asked her to do in that meeting. Instead, the insubordination appeared to be her conduct in that meeting, and that's why we've brought to the court clerk's records 176 through 180 for the court to see what went on in that meeting from the testimony of Ms. Lopez. And for that reason, we believe that that's a red herring, that Steele doesn't actually require one to the only Steele does not hold that the only way you can defeat a affirmative defense when they give a reason and evidence in support of that reason is to show that similarly situated folks. That, in fact, is one of the five types of evidence under City of Fort Worth versus Zimlich that can be used to show that the real reason was the report in question. In this case, there's evidence of suspicious timing, there's evidence of hostility to the report, there's evidence that the disputed nature of the meeting that led to the termination, and that the county failed to follow its progressive discipline policy. And that is reinforced by Tina Glenn's testimony. And therefore, we believe that at least Ms. Lopez should have her day in court. For those reasons, we would ask the court to reverse. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Smith, Mr. Ponder, and other counsel here today. We appreciate your attending today, and we appreciate all your briefing in this matter as well. Your case is now submitted.